Good morning, everybody. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 17. First Samuel chapter 17 is one of the most familiar stories in all of the Bible. I remember back in 1984, you guys gave me a going away party as I was about to escort or go with Bill Clark to Africa. I won't tell you about some of the gifts that I got, but they were supplies to take with me. I'll just put it that way. As I traveled with him to the Ivory Coast. This is the story of David and Goliath. And I remember on that trip, one of the religious missionaries that we encountered in our travels over those 19 days in a truck, one of these missionaries showed films when he would go to the various villages. And I remember going in and all of these folks was sitting with their legs crossed in the dirt watching this film that he had brought in. And off a projector that he had, and it was the story of David slaying this giant, and the story of him killing the bear and the lion with his bare hands and all that stuff. All I'm saying is, it's everybody knows this story. It's the story in this chapter of Goliath, and it describes to us the contempt and that was held by these Philistines for Israel. They hated them. They warred with them continually. And it's about the challenge that Goliath made by daring any man to come out of Israel's army to fight with him in single combat. If you won, you won the battle. Whoever won, won the battle. And the mere appearance of this giant Philistine turned Saul and his entire army into a trembling mass of fear. Serious fear. Look at verse 24. I'll skip around a little bit, so bear with me. It says there that all the men of Israel, when they saw this man, fled from him and were sore afraid. Why were they afraid? Because this giant was, in every sense of the word, a freak of nature. If you read, well, look at verse 4. If you read the account and the description of him, if you use our English measure in feet and inches, this man was 11 and a half feet tall. Huge. Huge. All of his armor is listed in verses 5 and 6. You can see that. And if you add the weight of his armor altogether, it weighed more than 350 pounds. And that doesn't include his shin guards that were made of brass. And he had a throat covering, which was not included in that weight. The spear that he carried, it's conjectured, quite logically so, was about 26 feet long. A spear. And the head of the spear was iron, and it projected to weigh over 18 pounds. The very sight of this creature would cause any of us to have an anxiety attack. Serious anxiety attack. Verse 16, look at that. And this Philistine, these two armies were apart from one another, with a valley in between them. And this Philistine, verse 16, drew near morning and evening and presented himself. Get that now. Presented. He was a tough guy. He presented himself for battle, challenging any man out of their country or army for 40 days in a row. 40. He come out morning and evening and challenged these folks. He was relentless. He was relentless. Now, David had been anointed king of Israel unbeknownst. I mean, Saul didn't even realize it at this point in time. But when he was anointed as king of Israel, he turned from that anointing and went back to the pastures where his sheep were grazing and tended the sheep of his father. He returned and tended the sheep of his father. Some of you will get the analysis there. That's what Christ does. That's what Christ did. As these challenges were being mounted by Goliath twice a day, his father called him out of the sheep tending, shepherding that he was carrying out, and sent him to carry a message and provisions, food, into the camp of Israel. And while about his father's business, look at verse 17. He was running. There's only one other place in the scriptures where that I see an analysis of God running to a sinner, running to the assistance of his elect. And that's the story of the father running to meet his son, the prodigal son, over in the New Testament. He was about his business, and his business was to deliver food to this army. He delivered 10 ephahs of corn, 10 loaves of bread, 10 cheeses, and he hears the challenge of Goliath as he is delivering these things. He gets down out of his carriage, handing out this food, and this giant of a man comes down in that valley, and he advances into the valley in all of his armor. I find this ironic. And a little man is carrying a big shield in front of him, in addition to that 500 pounds of armor that he had on. Well, David hears the challenge and he accepts it. David goes into battle without any weapons, commonly used in war of that day, but he went in the confidence of God. Saul, King Saul, gave him armor to put on, gave him his own armor to put on. And David put it on, but then he put it off. And he prevails over this giant Philistine, and he kills him. As a consequence, these Philistines are defeated, and Israel pursues them and just slaughters them. Now, that's what's in this chapter. A brief synopsis. I want you to look now at verse 28 and 29. Verse 28 begins, and Eliab, that's the eldest, David's eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and said, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the naughtiness of your heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." He's speaking to his little brother, and he's being pretty cocky. "What are you doing here? Who'd you leave the sheep with? Did you just come down here to watch?" Now, David had told these other folks, "Who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Somebody needs to take him out." Now, that's basically what he said, to paraphrase it. And his brother jumps on him for being so cocky. And David said, verse 29, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" This is where I'd like to spend some time. The words of David in verse 29 there are an answer to a jealous accusation that his brother makes to him in verse 28. We've all seen that. And the accusation that is pointed against David by his own brother was due to David's response to the blasphemy being vented by this giant Goliath against the God of Israel and his people. That's who were being threatened. Verse 26, if you'll look, "And David spake to the men that stood by him." When he saw and heard this giant make this challenge and speak derogatory of God and his army, he said, David spake to the men that stood by him and said, "What shall be done to the man that kills this Philistine and taketh away this reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now, Eliab was a coward along with the rest of them. He was as scared as all the rest of the army. They didn't want to fight. But they had received the king that they desired and rejected the king that God had chosen to put over them. They wanted their own king, and God gave it to them. And Eliab's cowardice, because of his unbelief, was revealed by the words of David. Eliab had not taken up the sword to defy this giant pagan, but instead he sat cowering with the rest of the mighty captains of this Israeli army. The conscience of Eliab was stung by these words of David. And his response was in the same way that the conscience often reacts in believers and unbelievers alike. I hope I can make this clear. Conscience, the conscience of a man, will either excuse or accuse you. That's only two things it'll do. It always does that, and it generally does so by shifting the blame to somebody else, and that's what Eliab was doing. That's what Eliab was doing. What David had said was just merely stating the obvious, but since the conscience makes cowards of us all, Eliab heard the words as an accusation against his bravery, what David said. David had merely naively spoken the truth. His interests were not pointed toward Eliab or any individual in the army of Israel. He had no self-serving agenda. His interests were rooted in one grand truth. And I want this, that is the heart and soul of every believer who ever lived in this world. That issue is the glory of God. It's the glory of God in redemption, in salvation. David wasn't speaking of God's glory in creation or providence when he made that comment. He wasn't just talking about the living God as the living God of providence and creation. He was speaking of what all the creation and providence serves. The only reason this earth exists and the only reason for anything that God does is toward the saving of his people. And he will get all the glory in that redemption and in that salvation. It's about the salvation and deliverance of God's people, and that's what David was all about when he made those comments. He wasn't boasting. He wasn't bragging. He wasn't berating anybody or anyone. He was defending. No, he was giving God all the glory. Now, this glory is especially seen in the bruising of Satan's head by the king, prophet, and priest that the Lord sent to save his people, that being David, and that being David being a type of Christ. Israel is scared on this occasion because they have rejected God in the choice of their king. They chose Saul and rejected David. Rejected the Lord's choice. They didn't know that it would have been David at that time. But the Lord had rejected their king because he has openly disobeyed God, Saul. But despite their unbelief, God's going to save people. God's going to save a people. And that's pictured in this chapter. And he'll do it by his anointed king. One man, he by himself, void of worldly armor, a lowly shepherd, will bruise the enemy's head. He put a rock through his helmet right there. And he was dead. And then he cut his head off and carried it by the hair of the head to the king Saul. A single hero is going to win this day. But first he comes to his own, his brother. He came to his own and his own received him not. They of his own house will turn against him and accuse him of all manner of evil. Now this was a great victory. And it's the most familiar aspect of the messages that you've probably heard on this text. But I want to do something not a little different. I want to go from a different direction in considering David today. I want to consider him as a believer. And hopefully I can express or articulate, if you will, what I'm trying to say. I want to consider David as a believer. Let's just state it that way. Or even a preacher who simply tells the truth. And what you as a believer or anyone as a pastor or preacher or evangelist or whatever, what you can expect from those who are closest to you. If you're a believer, if God has given you faith to believe the gospel, you have a single message. And that message is our cause. Remember that word? Is there not a cause? That was David's response. as a believer, your knowledge and your understanding of God and the method of His grace exceeds anything that anyone could ever learn out of a book in a schoolroom. It just don't come that way. It just doesn't come that way. You've got a single and a plain message, and that single and plain message is a cause. It's a cause. And that message is the cause, and the cause is the glory of God. No matter the question that might ever come up related to your redemption, your salvation, and your being chosen of God, no matter what the question is, wherever it comes up, the answer is going to be Christ and Him crucified. And every debate ends right there. Right there. To be so bold, like David, as to say that Christ is all of salvation from beginning to end, from election to glorification to justification, is to remove yourself from the equation and give God all the glory. Does that make sense? You're not going to have it any other way if you're a believer in Christ. The work is done. God did it all. And that's the end of the story. You ain't going to brag about nothing that you've done that will justify you or defend you except being in Christ and giving God all the glory for that being done. It's to declare that you had nothing to do with your salvation, no planning in it. You had nothing to do with the execution of it, the accomplishment of it, or its consummation to come. And that, for a fact, you didn't even know that you were saved, past tense, until God sent a preacher, now listen to me, to you and revealed to you what Christ had already done and already accomplished for you. That's what Ephesians says, in whom you believe after that you heard of your salvation. Have you heard of yours? Believe it. This is the sense of what David is asking in verse 29. Is there not a cause? God deserves and He will receive all the glory for salvation. And this is the cause of every believer. David's brother, just as with David's brother, such a motive won't sit well with those who believe that salvation's up to them. Or at least it's a mutual effort between them and God. The true believer is unflinching. He's going to justify God by giving Him all the glory. The true believer is unflinching, and it's especially true when you stand alone between the religious pagan and those who profess to know God, but they refuse to give Him all the glory. And David was right dead between them. That's where Christ was. And ironically, the attack that will follow won't be against the truth. That's when I came to realize that, I thought, that's not going to make sense if I tell them that. But it's true. The attack that follows your cause, you expressing the cause of the glory of God. Doesn't really attack the truth. Because if they do attack the truth, they risk revealing their own profession to be illegitimate. It's kind of like they kill the messenger. They jump on the messenger like Eliab attacked David. What are you doing down here? What's the answer to that? I'll get a little more in a minute. David, having been attacked by Eliab showed that he had the same weapons designed to make the believer question himself as to motive. Hopefully I can illustrate it. False religion, accusations and arrows are shot and they go to the heart of what every believer knows is his own estate. Satan attacked Eve 6,000 years ago and he said, has God really said that? Has God really said that? And that's the angle from which David's brother is coming now. He didn't attack David's person. He attacked David's motive. And David's answer was, is there not a cause? That's why I said what I said. I'm not sure Eliab even understood it. But David did. Though these attacks that we come under never come as accusations of illicit behavior or forbidden behavior, like worshiping idols or anything you want to come up with. Think of the worst. Most believers are not guilty of those such overt behaviors anyway. But the darts are pointed at a sure target, and I think I can show you. They're aimed at facts that are of our very being, okay? They're accusations that sting us because we know that these things are within us and the source of continual struggles in our own minds. And if one were to accuse me of pride, all I can say is, guilty. Does that make sense? If you take what David said, it sounds like boasting. True enough. If one were to ask you, maybe you've had it happen. If someone walked up to you on the street, I went to church Sunday, yeah, so did I. Where'd you go? I go to Bible Baptist. Yeah, I've heard about y'all. What makes your little group so special? Well, let me tell you something. It is special. But it's not going to make you feel any better because they ask you that question and you've got to answer it. The only answer that can be given is, isn't there a cause? Is there not a cause? It's their subtle way of accusing us of pride, and that's what David's brother was accusing him of, pride. And it's always... it always has a stinging effect because actually they appear reasonable in asking that question. There's no answer that'll satisfy. excuse me. There's no action answer that'll satisfy, because they're not really questions. They're accusations that tortures every believer. It's our pride. Tell somebody that you're chosen of God. Try that out. Try that out. That'll get you some questions and accusations. You think you're special. No, that's not what we're saying. We're chosen of God. Chosen of God. And we're thankful for it. And we're humbled by it. But you say that, and somebody's going to jump your rump. The next time you're made to experience something like that, here's your answer. Isn't there a cause? It's the glory of God. The glory of God's at stake. Eliab was just making an accusation against his big brother, little brother, I don't know. Notice verse 28. Eliab accuses David of showing us where he's not wanted. Showing up where he's not wanted. He said, "Why came you down here?" David's very presence was a reminder to Eliab that he was a coward. And he'd forgotten the glory of God. Eliab could not attack David's words, but he could attack David, and that's what he did right there. What he was really saying is, we don't want to be reminded of our impotence. Why don't you just go away? Same thing. Same thing. Notice again in verse 28, Eliab accused David of irresponsibility. He said, "Why'd you come down here?" See it? "And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" It's not, David, it's not your place to confront us with our unbelief. If you just were where you ought to be. Declaring the truth puts things in their proper place. And when David said, "Who's this pagan that he should blaspheme God?" Eliab heard this. He said, "Why are you sitting on your butt doing nothing?" That's what he heard David say. Believers don't give or withhold assurance, but the message that they preach is so absolute that it immediately convinces the hearer as to where he stands in relationship to that truth. And it's a scary thing to realize that when you tell someone the truth, it immediately discovers and reveals where the hearer is. He's either in or out. I don't have vocabulary to put it any other way. I'm trying. In discussing sickness, let me ask you this. And providence and the sovereignty of God, one time, I had a relative who said to me, I don't want to give too many details here, but the response to sickness in the world, the providence of God in that sickness, and the sovereignty of God in all operations of this whole world, after a good deal of discussion, and at the end of it, the response was, "If that is the God you worship, I hate him. I hate him." And David declared that God must be glorified. But Eliab was immediately discovered to have no interest in glorifying God. The believer naively tells the truth because it is the truth. because there is a cause, and doing so often brings out the worst in the enemy, those who oppose our gospel and our Redeemer. Look at verse 28 again. Eliab brings out the big gun. He accuses David of pride, verse 28. I know your pride. As I've said, this always hits home. This always hits home. It stings us. It's the monster that resides in all of our bosoms. There's no real answer to this accusation because there is always an element of the truth to it. You just got to admit it. David had not acted in pride when he stood for God's glory. But the generic truth is that David was a human being. And therefore pride was always with him, just like it is with us. Though David was not guilty of pride, in what he said to some degree, immediately, he did to some degree, immediately defend himself. He said, what have I done? Maybe I misspoke. Maybe I didn't say what I meant to say. Maybe I didn't express it properly. David had done nothing amiss. But the word now in that verse, see it? The word now suggests that this was not the first time that he'd been accused of that. You see that? Or that if he had not spoken in pride at this time, he'd perhaps detected it in his own heart prior to Eliab ever saying it. The only workable response in this second phrase is his second phrase there. Is there not a cause? Or it could be, this ain't about me. It's about the glory of God. Yes, sir. Look again at verse 28. Eliab accused David of an evil motive by speaking of the naughtiness. That naughtiness there is evil. It's not the naughtiness that you get out of a little two-year-old misbehaving. That's evil. David was sent with groceries to feed his children, brethren. He spoke of God's glory, and Eliab told David that his heart was evil. And those who know the truth and gladly give God all the glory will sometimes in their lives be accused of evil motives. The subtle accusations that we've already addressed suggest that we have an evil motive in our separation to the gospel. And if we refuse to join with the multitudes who deny and defy God, deny God all the glory, then expect to be labeled evil, sectarian, occult. And finally, in verse 28, again, he accuses David of not being interested in God's glory. But what David said was for his own glory. Those words, you came out to see the battle. You came out to see the battle, can suggest a couple of things. It could mean that David was just a spectator. He didn't mean that he had said, but said it to raise the ire of Israel. It's kind of like a coach on the sideline. Go get them. And he was as scared as the rest of them. But that wasn't true. David said, is there not a cause? Secondly, Eliab knew that David was a fierce warrior. He knew David had killed a bear and a lion with his bare hands. And Eliab is accusing David of seeking to extend his own fame and win the hearts of the people by his bravado. That was not David's motive. He had simply declared the truth. God was glorified as he must be, and so he declared, is there not a cause? Now, we live among the religious, and we with the truth assault this giant. We're doing nothing more than bringing food to the brethren and seeking to say that God is to be glorified in all of it. When those of our own household accuse us of all manner of pride and evil, naughtiness, we shouldn't defend ourselves. Even though we've done no wrong, our answer is simple and plain. Is there not a cause? The glory of God's at stake. Thank you.